While this week's episode of Fear the Boot has the profanities bleeped out as usual, some of the humor and references are a bit more crude than what we usually do. So if you're offended by such things or in the presence of people that might be, please put this episode on a shelf and catch us on the next one. As for those of you that are sticking around, I hope you enjoy the show. It's Monday, November 25th, 2013. And you're listening to episode 321 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 30 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
I'm Mike.
I am Other Mike.
I guess
Mike
I should be
Mike
Brodeur.
On the mics. Yeah,
I was going to say, I was actually going to ask you that anyway before I knew there was going to be a second Mike here. It's like, should I start crediting you in the show notes as Mike or Brodeur?
Brodeur's fine.
Okay. Kind of like Brodeur better anyway, because there's more obscene jokes we can make with that.
Yeah, Brodeur odor is what I got a lot in school.
Really?
Yeah.
And the other Mike Kramer is, of course, Mike Kramer of Action Nerds Go.
Yes, that is correct. We have
the now fiance of our full-time host, Julie.
But that is also correct.
I'm not, there's a lot of incestuous inter-podcast guesting.
There is.
Guest hosting.
It's a tight community.
Yeah,
it's
I had
only
no
way
idea.
To get anything
what?
Done.
Actually, I say we've got real podcast incest going here with Mike and Julia getting married. So,
yeah. That's
true. It's like a Game of Thrones style thing where we're like joining the houses in order to become more powerful.
That's right.
So, you know.
Which one of you is going to kill the other?
Well, what's probably going to happen is that whoever's running this whole deal is just going to get bored with us because they've fallen too in love with our character. And so then they're just going to off whoever they like the most if it stays true to my...
So there's a fat
George Martin
man writing
right.
The story of the St. Louis podcast scene. Very good.
I know that you've got a whole sort of PG-13 thing going on, but when we're not on the mics, let me tell you how George R.R. Martin, the R is for rape. I'll tell you that.
It is. He is George Rape Martin. Both the R's are for rape.
No, yeah, exactly,
I've said this
exactly
on the mics before,
have
dude.
Have you? Okay.
Yes.
See, I've espoused that thing
yes,
for a
yes.
long, long time.
And then he twisted her nipples for 900 pages of book.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
And by the way, they were brother and sister, so it was really weird. Yes, George, we got that the first time.
He is the most vile... depraved individual I have ever
I'm a violent
read.
Depraved individual in my literary pursuits, but he's just boring. He just does the same crap.
I have to say, I liked the first three books a lot. The fourth book was okay, and the fifth book, here's my review in a minute. Rape, torture, rape, food porn, rape, torture, torture, rape, torture, psychological damage from torture, food porn, rape. And then the book's done.
So like an average Saturday in Jefferson City, Missouri.
I have not read any of those books, but I've watched the show, and there doesn't seem to be quite so much rape and food porn, but I mean, it's pretty brutal.
Oh, I'm telling you what, man, and this is not, never mind, this is for kicked in the desk.
Yeah, I did.
All right.
I'm going to reel you guys in.
All right. That was literary criticism.
Yeah. This is high intellectual
in genre.
Okay.
Surely somewhere out there right now is in a Game of Thrones RPG listening to us, taking notes, learning about the topic.
That's what
you,
my game is
sir
lacking,
and or
rape.
Madam. You're welcome.
GM's so, like, oh, food porn. That's what I was missing on my... I'll have to do more...
Two things I want to knock off real quick. First off...
All your characters.
No, he's not George Martin.
Oh, okay.
First off, I want to thank Jason Brick, who did an article about Fear the Boot for the American Express Open Forum, which is a community site for entrepreneurs, obviously sponsored by American Express. It's a pretty cool article that kind of compares and contrasts Fear the Boot with some of the business ventures that I've been involved in. And apparently I do a lot better in things that don't make money than things that do. But I will link that in the show notes. So if you're interested in kind of seeing some of the behind the scenes of how Fear the Boot operates, then you'll be interested in checking this out. The second thing is we were terrible lazy slackers and didn't get involved in this quickly enough. But there are 6 podcasts that are doing a fun drive competition for Christmas. So each podcast picked its own charity, and they right now are in a contest to see who can raise the most money for their charity. Now, I wanted to pick a winner just to kind of, you know, stuff the ballot box any style, but there are several podcasts in there that I've got much love for, so I don't really know how to do that. So instead, I'm just going to go ahead and put up the link and tell you guys, get out there, pick the one that you like the most, and back that one. And see, I can't even bag on anybody. It can't be like, you know, oh, don't back Happy Jacks, because I'm only hurting the cause he's backing. You know, it really has nothing to do with him. I think I'm just going to have to water down the lemonade that they get a little bit or something like that.
I saw that and I got an idea in my head. Like, I saw these people on Twitch doing a run through of Desert Bus. Are you familiar with that game? Mm-hmm.
Penn and Teller's
Desert Bus, where you drive back and forth between Tucson and Vegas, and they just sit there with their bus for like hours and hours and hours and get charity contributions.
Yeah, it's a Sega CD game or something.
Yeah, like Sega CD. It was never published. We could do that on a Twitch channel with like Dragon Warrior or Final Fantasy or something. I think we should do that the next time this comes around.
Final Fantasy Tactics or something like that.
Tactics, yeah. I would do a sit down one game all the way playthrough of FFT.
But here's the thing though, you can't, the reason why that works is because the game is terrible. And so it's a like a punishment game in a Japanese game show, you know, right, where it's like that's
but there's
like
some
the,
there's other people who
do
like
a, you can't do with a good
Mario
game.
No, there's people who do good games. They'll do like speedruns of Mario 3 and stuff.
Well, I wouldn't donate for seeing somebody do a good game. Well, I want to see somebody play.
Then let's pick a bad game.
Superman Super Nintendo. You know, it's like the worst, you know, Atari ET game.
We've
you know,
got Brodor back. We could have
be like mop Brodor's floors.
We could play Atari ET,
or
but
40K.
I think you can solve Atari ET in like 10 minutes if you know what you're doing.
This is probably true, but
either that or it's totally unsolvable because it's broken. I don't remember. It's one of those two things.
First, step one of playing it is dig a cart out of a landfill and
get
California.
On the desert bus to Arizona.
Yeah, right.
Go to the landfill and dig out a copy of ET. Yeah, that's LARPing.
Yeah,
that's a 4D game. It integrates real life.
I'm going to run that Fiasco.
Nice.
Like, I'm totally going to do that with Fiasco.
All right. So
I'll play in it.
Topic for today is actually brought to us by Brodor. You pitch something at me that I have trouble seeing, but I want to hear this idea. I don't want to say per se defended, because I see where you're coming from. I just don't see it actually working.
The preface of this idea is terrifying me.
All right, so here we go. for those of you out there, and I hope I'm going to blow John's mind.
Okay.
But so there was a time where I game mastered for money.
What?
Yeah, I game mastered for money.
You filthy harlot.
I'm a whore. But I'll get to that in a minute. The current Pathfinder game that I run started as a game for money.
Oh, and then you fell in love and got hooked up by pretty women style?
That's exactly what happened. At the end of the first session, I was like, guys, look, I'm a whore that climaxed. I can't take your money. I really want to spend time with you.
That's right? What you get for kissing on
that's,
the mouth.
Yeah, please. You shouldn't kiss when you're whoring.
So
everyone knows
so
that.
Years ago, my brother, who I have always idolized, who's a brilliant, brilliant game master, hangs out with a guy named Phil Kilgore, who owns a store out in Kansas City. And Phil had a group of kids who were looking for a game master, and he pitched the idea to my brother. My brother's like, I'll do it for money. Well, they said, okay, how much? So my brother ended up charging him $10 a head for an all day Saturday game once a month. So my brother tells me about this idea, and I'm like, that's insane. I totally got to do that. So there were a group of guys hanging out at the game store where I work who wanted me to run a game for them, and I said, fine, I'll do it for money. And they're like, what? I'm like, I'll do it for money. And they basically gave me, you know, the one finger salute. And that was that. A week later, they come back and they're like, well, how much money? And what kind of terms are we talking about? So I said, okay,
terms now.
Yeah. So I said, okay, great. No more than every other week. No more than 4 hour sessions. No more than six players. No fewer than four players and $5 a head. So next thing you know, I'm running a game for four guys every other week, and they're paying me $5 a head cash to run their D&D game, which, by the way, out there is not enough money for you people who are interested in this endeavor.
Yeah, but I was going to say, like, you said you'd charge. I didn't realize you meant you charged $5 for a whole night. Like,
right.
That's
well,
not
4 hours
right.
is
for
hardly.
4 hours, right? So, you know, it's
that's like bare minimum.
No, right.
Game
so
time.
I was like that chick down on the east side, you know, giving
that's
giving
like
HJs,
the hand job, yeah.
Right, for $2, right?
I run the 3 to 4 hours, man. I like it punchier. So I want to maintain cohesion.
If I'm going to give it up, I need to have like a day for gaming. You know?
Right.
No,
So word gets out that I'm game mastering for money. And there's another group of guys at the shop. There are six of them, and they want to run a game. So now it turns out every Tuesday night, I'm playing Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 for $5 a head. I'm making $100 a month. Cash tax-free for playing D&D.
You mean you totally declared it.
As not my attorney, I shouldn't have said that. Well, anyway, well, just like being too close to the microphone, I'm going to blame the alcohol.
All right, so here's the thing. Storytelling, obviously, is a very, very old, not just
as is prostitution.
I know
that you somehow combine the two.
It's not just an old tradition. It is an old profession. And all of us pay to hear other people's stories, whether it's in the form of video games, novels, movies, television shows.
Sure.
I guess with TV, we don't pay, but, you know, you still nonetheless, well, you sit through the ads or at least fast forward through them. But the point being, all of us pay money for somebody else's stories. So in principle, I cannot come up with a reason why it would be unreasonable for a game master to charge a group of people, particularly if, number one, none of them will GM. So they need you to GM because none of them will do it. And secondly, they're dictating to you the kind of game they want run or something like that. I can't come up with a reason why that's wrong, but I've just never heard of anyone actually doing this.
It feels dirty.
So here, it gets better. There's an organization called Gamma, the Game Manufacturers Association, right, yeah. And they've got a retail division. I'm at the Gamma show in Vegas this year.
I'm a member and not sure why.
I met this cat named Anthony, who is absolutely amazing. The guy used to work for NASA. Got bored working for NASA, went to go work for his buddy's store in California that sells Magic the Gathering cards, and he charges $10 an hour per player.
An hour?
Yeah. To run his game.
Okay, so if you've got four guys...
Now you're talking
$160.
Right.
Four hours is $160. Right.
Now, because he looked at me...
So he's like an escort.
Yeah, so he and I were talking, and
those
he goes...
Those better be some damn good games.
He looked at me and he goes, Mike, you don't have any idea what it is that you're giving these people, what you're sharing with these people, the value that you have, right? So he's like, you're way undercharging, man. He's like, if you're going to do this again, you got to do it. Fast forward, I'm with a group of guys at the shop, and one of the guys who works for the company is a really good friend of mine, and he wants me to run a game, and a couple of his buddies have been literally bugging me for years to run a game for him, and I'm like, phew, I'm not going to do it unless I've got money. So Daniel's like, how much? I'm like, Dad, $20 an hour. And I gave him the rest of my parameters. What you don't know about Daniel is that he's independently wealthy. He doesn't need to have a job. He's got a ton of money from some dead family members.
$50 an hour.
So he's like, great, when do we start? I'm like, oh. So to not go on a big tangent and meander, Anthony's point when I met him back at Gamma in the spring was you are providing a service, a type of entertainment that other people can't or are unwilling to do.
Most can't.
And this entertainment has value. And now he went really trippy dippy on me and equated it to the old shamans and about how storytelling and passing on of traditions and legends, etc. The guy's a genius. I won't do his soliloquy any justice. His point was is that you're providing a service that you deserve to be compensated for your time. So I thought, yeah, you know what? I'm on board with this.
Let me play devil's advocate on the other side here, because a game master tells an interactive story. You do not have complete control.
Sure.
Therefore, in a way, aren't the players also providing a service to the game master?
Not in the games I play.
Yeah. See,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
There's no community horde of game masters out there looking at each other with their... in their hand going, man, I wish we had a player.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't happen.
This is why the economics of the situation are as they are.
And okay.
Brodor, I have thought of this. I'm jealous that you pulled it off. The only reason I haven't done it is that I haven't thought of a way to execute it.
So
when that website came out, where you could pay girls to play Left 4 Dead and Counter-Strike with you, the first thing I thought was, I should do this, but for GMs and tabletop RPGs.
It can happen.
But I didn't because I can't code.
So
we're working on that.
Before you walk us through this, I just have to ask one question. Okay, so as a man who manages four RPG shops, have you thought about making that a diversification of your services and having like a stable of rented GMs?
So the short answer is yes.
Can you be a GM pimp?
Yeah,
can you graduate?
So, so in what kind of stable?
What kind of fraction are you talking about, Brodor? Because I'll do this. I'm not going to pay you pimp money. I'm going to keep
Johnny
90
G?
Cents on my dollar.
Mr. Franklin's lonely.
Exactly.
No. I would be more like a Hollywood manager. I wouldn't be looking for anything more than like 15%.
Right. I treat you like an agent, not like a street pimp.
Right, but you'd have to understand is that different? If I stop returning your phone calls, it's because people don't want the product.
Right.
That's all I'd be worried about.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's got you, baby. He's got you covered.
People have been listening to my ass talk about TTRPGs for 7 years on this freaking microphone. They'll play my game.
You know what's going to happen? As soon as this episode goes live, all of a sudden there's going to be a new thread that pops up on the boards. It's like, how can we manage to get so-and-so to game for us? And
the same way you can motivate anyone to do anything.
So money.
Pay them.
Let me speak out of the other side of my mouth. So I'm really, really selective about who I do RP with.
Okay.
And I've always looked at it as this extremely intimate thing where I have people that I know, people that I trust, and people that I want to. This is my imagination. I'm letting you walk into my mind and share that with you. And so I don't want to be criticized. I don't want to be mocked. Constructive criticism is one thing, but being mocked is another thing entirely. But I'm a whore, and I'll do it for money.
As we've established.
So let's go through these steps of how do you actually make this work?
All right. So the first step is personality. You have to have enough charisma to be able to command a room.
Okay. Right? So how did you do it?
Exactly, right? So you've got to have enough charisma to persuade people that you can do it.
So like 14.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So you've got to have a plus two. But then the other thing is that you have to do it. Like, you have to be good at it. You have to establish a game with people that other people talk about and say, that particular individual is a kick-ass game. Exactly. Yeah. So that particular individual runs a kick-ass game, and that's somebody you want to game with. And then you cultivate that reputation for a really, really long time, and then you can say, you pay me. And then people eventually like, no way, I'm not going to pay you to play Dungeons and Dragons. But then eventually that reputation, that is so good
that they're going to pay for it. The first knee-jerk reaction is go to hell, always.
Right.
But then it's a matter of 12 or 24 or 2 hours later, they call you back and say, okay, how much?
Right.
Well, we're just going to have to accept this.
The thing, too, is that it's like any business proposition. It all has to do with supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, our gaming group with Julie, we have a round robin of GMs that go for different games.
As like,
I've played and I GM a Pathfinder game, and then everybody else will play that. And then Jason he'll GM another Pathfinder game, and I'm playing in that. And so you get kind of this, you know, like I said, kind of round robin thing, where if anybody wanted me to pay them to GM, I have no reason to do that because I've got, you know.
Right. Right. But running game stores, working in the game store, if there is one thing that gamers always need is other gamers, mm-hmm. right? Other people to hang out with in game. The one thing they need desperately even more than that are game masters, people to run said game. Yes. And there are guys out there that'll do it for money. So you get a good reputation, you run a good game. And the real key for me, in my experience, is you have to do a production. The game just can't be, I bought a module off the shelf, we sit down, we run through the module, and that's that. No. You have got to do something big and grandiose and intricate and interesting, and you've got to have the miniatures, and you've got to have the props, and you've got to have the battle mat. And so my guys, when they play with me, all you've got to do is show up. You don't need to bring your dice. You don't need to bring your books. You don't need to bring pencils. Just sit down and ante up. I had a guy, this guy, Jake Jenkins, whom I absolutely adore, and I miss not gaming with him. And I like him so much, he wouldn't even have to pay me. But
that's Jake, high praise.
Jake used to take 5 Sacagawea gold dollars. And at the beginning of the game, I'd be like, ante up, bitches. And Jake would just splash the pot with his 5 Sacagawea gold coins. It was truly glorious. But the first group, ultimately, they disbanded. Basically, they fired me because they didn't really dig what was going on, which was fine. And the second group, I ended up firing. But that's a story. I know that we don't tell gaming stories on this show, so I'll forego it. But essentially, I told them, you know, one game session, look, this is it. This is the last game.
So to all of our listeners, I want to apologize.
Why? This is a great episode.
I say, I'm lost.
We're about to spark a revolution of...
I think this goes against everything we have ever stood for. Well, all right, but I'm fascinated now. This is like sitting down...
No. This is perfect. For once, I'm the blonde at the bar because I'm a competent GM.
Right.
I can dictate the terms of my social interaction and charge people money to talk to them.
I'm going
to
have intercourse with you anyway. I may as well profit from it, right?
Okay, all right. So you said you have thought about doing this at the store level.
Well, yeah, but I know that it would never get off the ground with
I don't know about that.
However, I have this elaborate fantasy of doing this as a profession.
You know what you need? You know, well, here's what I picture is that you have like some sort of like Yelp reviews of GMs, you know, where people have to like get their star ratings.
If I can make $20 every day, 5 days a week, for 8 hours, I can do okay for myself and play D&D or Pathfinder.
You make like a community site, like rentagm.com, and people can leave reviews and you can put up your profile.
This, yes.
These are the styles of games I run. These are the titles I run.
That is exactly what they do on the Pay a Girl to Play Video Games with You website, which is why it's in my head as the template for the GM.
Well, then they took that from prostitutes.
Of course they did. Yeah. It is prostitution. Well, that is what we're talking about.
Everything has been,
They tell you what kind of games they play. They tell you there's ratings from customers. All this could be done for GM.
Yeah.
Well, here, let me.
All these worlds are yours.
I kind of want to touch back to something that you kind of alluded to, Dan. The idea behind this, like, I'm kind of with you where it's like, I kind of get what's going on, and I can't really say, this is wrong, or I don't agree with it, or there's somebody being taken advantage of here, or something. It's kind of like, you know, prostitution.
Right. Oh, it's a victim. The analogy is right. You know, it's exactly what it is with sex. Yeah. So it's something like, that's intimate. It's something that's cheapened by paying for it. But there's enough of a scarcity of supply that it happens anyway.
Right. All right. Yeah. Here's the thing. All right, finish your point.
Well, my question is that there seems to me something inherently distasteful about paying for an emotional connection with other people, or like you said, it's sort of
the movies.
They do that in strip joints without even giving you a.
Do you play video games?
Yes, but here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. When I pay for a movie, okay, I'm paying for a product, not necessarily the experience of the product. I'm not paying for someone to regale me personally with the story of.
So you're not getting as much for
Iron Man. Well, it's not that I'm not getting as much for my money.
But you could go to a live theater and do the same thing.
I don't go to theaters, but I mean, I get your point.
Right.
But kind of like a weird thing, like I would never go to a prostitute. I would never pay a girl to play video games with me, even if I was like super desperate. Oh, I gotta get a girl to do something with me. I wouldn't pay to have that experience.
Are you kidding?
You know what I mean?
I would totally. I love my wife. My wife is a saint. She is an angel. And God forbid if anything ever happened with her, I would totally go to prostitute.
Worst. Yeah, I don't know. Like, but I mean, I get that there's just like there's like this kind of like paying for GMing seems like it's an upset of the balance
filthy.
Of you know the gaming world. It
you
just
know,
doesn't
but,
seem.
But my point. I'm sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
Well, no, I'll go back to what I said, which is that we pay for storytelling all the freaking time.
You pay for cable?
I have to wonder if probably
look,
because
I'm
just going to tell you straight up. Obviously, I'm married to Carla. But if tomorrow she walked in and said $40, you name it.
You'd have to think about it.
I've got to say that, yeah.
I have to think about it.
Like, dear, you know, anything you want, $40, you know, and look.
All right. How about
I don't
this?
Think it's an Illuminati of players.
How about this?
Just dumb. We haven't charged yet.
So Dan, here we go. You're going to come over to my house. You're going to sit down in my chair. You don't got to bring nothing but your appetite for gaming. I got the dice. I got pencils. I got character sheets. But here's the thing. There's no campaign pitch, but what comes from you. You're going to pitch the campaign. You're going to pick the game system. You want to play evil characters? You can play evil characters, baby. You can do it. You guys want to play Midnight where you work for the Shadow? That's okay. You want to play the Red Wizards? Ooh, you got the Red Wizards, baby. I'll do
it
all.
In the course of you talking, you grew a mustache. A big, dirty-ass 1970s mustache.
My point is...
And I think I have chlamydia.
It's what you were saying before. You buy comic books.
Yeah.
You pay for cable.
Yeah.
You pay for video games. You pay for films. You go out to the movie theaters. What you're doing as a game master is a tremendous service and a skill that... Art
no,
of performance,
okay, right.
I think deserves compensation.
I think I've narrowed down why I find this kind of weird. You're absolutely right. And I can't, and what you said too, Dan, where it's like you pay for stories all the time. You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. Imagine that you saw your first movie when you were 12,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it was a movie that your best friend made with the rest of your friends. And then the next movie you saw was a different friend of yours that made a different movie with your friends, and every single movie that you'd ever been to and ever watched was something that you and your friends made, mm-hmm. and then somebody started charging you to go to movies.
That's the kicker, though. I'm not talking about sleeping with my wife. I'm just talking about sleeping with some strange bud off the street who wants to have sex for
money.
He's
not talking about gaming with his friend group. He's talking about
gaming with strangers.
But I'm talking about it as an experience, though.
Sure, sure.
But you know,
I would make the counterpoint that Stephen King's friends probably get his books for free, and that J.J. Abrams' friends get to go to his movies for free. My friends get to game with me for free, and they get to get the full Mike experience.
All right.
But the people who pay me get the experience that they're paying for. They want the girlfriend experience? They get that. They want the toothless crack whore who takes out her dentures experience? They get that. They get the experience that they sign up for.
So you submit total creative control to the customers.
Well, I would be a liar if I said yes.
I don't think you could. I don't think you could run a good game and have no agency over it.
Right.
Part of running a good game is liking what you're doing.
All right, but when you play a video game, you don't. It's the same thing. You're, you know, even as close as you can get to like a sandbox game, like, you know, GTA.
The sandbox.
Or, you know,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, you're still that, yeah.
The one big triple.
Have some of my red stripes, dude. I got a six pack.
Oh, maybe.
All right, but you do make an interesting point, which is that game mastering is not just the act of storytelling, but especially if you turn it to production, there is a skill to it. There is a product to it.
There's absolutely a skill to it.
If you
can rank your friends as GMs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you which friends I prefer to have as GMs, or at least which ones I would prefer for a particular title or campaign pitch. Those people bring a skill. They're expected to know the rules, to know the setting. If you go so far as bringing in props and all that kind of stuff and supplying the paperwork, I mean, in the average group, as much as we have really pushed the idea that gaming ought to be collaborative, and I really believe it ought to be collaborative, the reality is in the average group, the lion's share of the work ends up falling back on the game master anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
And the game master has to put in all this time to study the rules, to study the setting, to write the game, to figure out how to handle contingencies, to bring all the products that are necessary, to bring the character sheets, to deal with the problem guy. And once again, this ought to, in gumdrop land, be a shared labor. The reality is it almost always falls back on the GM anyway. If it's going to be for some group of strangers who none of them want to GM, why not charge them for it? You're right. You are kind of giving away something that requires a lot of skill, a lot of time, potentially a lot of stress. Completely free.
Well, that is the thing about being a GM, though, is that each player has the responsibility of one character, and the GM has the responsibility of every other character on Earth or whatever you're
in the entire multiverse.
Right, exactly.
Everything
right.
That has ever happened or will happen.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's if you decide to be a GM, you're choosing to take on the mantle of God. And if you think that that's not going to entail more work, even in a collaborative setting, you're dreaming. You know,
the amount of effort, and I say this and I don't want to sound too terribly prideful, but one of the things that I love about gaming is the creative process. I've never run a module in my life. I've never picked up somebody else's adventure and run it.
Scumbag Brodor runs gaming stores, never plays modules.
I've always prided myself on writing my own thing and pouring my heart and soul into this adventure, into this campaign, and some of them have fallen on their face, and some of them have absolutely been magical. But if you pay me to game, you know, I'm not going to flip with the Kama Sutra to page 14 and be like, okay, we're going to do that. No. You tell me what you want to do. I will fit into that particular mold. I will play the game that you want to play. My Pathfinder game right now, we're doing something so stupid, so ridiculously over the top, I don't even know how it ended up this way, and I think it was my idea. But it would have been worth running the game if I was getting money, but we had so much fun that I was happy to do it for free.
Here's how I want to close this one out. First of all, please check the show notes and look at the American Express article and the charities, and please do not hold the rest of the show against
them. And then use your American Express to buy a Game Master.
but not a module. You find fancy shops.
I don't take credit cards.
But I am curious what people think on this one, because it's like there's one part of me that is completely revolted by this and another part of me that's like, yeah, he's got a point.
Just like prostitution.
There's going to be
results. There's a part of you that feels so gross and so dirty about it. And there's another part of you that says, but then she goes away when we're done.
The thread will have revolt because it will be full of PCs that don't GM.
Amen. I love this guy.
That's right. See, I can see the future. I'm a warrior.
I'm terribly sorry. Thank you for tuning in to Fear the Boot. Have a great week and great games, whatever you pay for them. And we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.